This is Radio Boston. I'm Anthony Brooks, and we'll begin today with gun legislation in Massachusetts and efforts to address gun violence across the country. This year, there have already been 147 mass shootings. That's according to the Gun Archive, which tracks these numbers and defines a mass shooting as an attack in which four or more people are killed. The guns used in many of these shootings are made in Massachusetts, which has been manufacturing weapons since the days of George Washington. So today, a group of Massachusetts lawmakers introduced legislation that would expand the state's assault weapons ban. Under a current law, it's illegal to sell or own a military-style rifle in the state. The new law would outlaw the manufacture of these weapons for sale to private citizens in other states. State Representative Marjorie Decker, a Democrat from Cambridge, is the lead sponsor of the bill, which is called an act to stop mass shootings.
We don't allow these assault weapons to be made and sold here in Massachusetts to private citizens. So why should we allow them to be made here and sold to private citizens across the nation?
Among those speaking in support of the bill today were Sandy and Lonnie Phillips. Their daughter, Jessica, 24, was among those shot to death in the Aurora, Colorado movie theater almost 9 years ago. Here's Sandy Phillips.
She was killed by an AR-15 that was made by Smith & Wesson in Massachusetts. My daughter was shot 6 times. These weapons are made in your state, but they can't be sold in your state. So in effect, Massachusetts is exporting bloodshed to the rest of the country.
That's Sandy Phillips talking about her daughter Jessica, who was among 12 victims shot to death in Aurora, Colorado in July of 2012. And we'll be hearing more from her in a little bit. But first, let's welcome John Rosenthal. He's founder of Stop Handgun Violence and a supporter of the legislation announced today. John Rosenthal, great to have you. Thanks for joining us.
Thank you, Anthony.
And I want to invite the listeners into this conversation. If you have questions or comments, you can call us at 800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. You can also tweet us at Radio Boston. Do you think expanding the assault weapons ban by making it illegal for Massachusetts-based gun makers to manufacture and sell these weapons to private citizens in other states, do you think that's a good idea? John, let's start about your view on why this law is necessary. Draw a line between guns that are made here in Massachusetts and gun violence that is taking place in other states.
Sure. And it's a solemn day. Because today is the 22nd anniversary of the massacre at Columbine, Colorado. And there's been a mass shooting of four or more people every single day over the last 3 years and since January 1st this year, on average, 2 a day. And there's another one going on today. So here in Massachusetts, urban Massachusetts, and I'm a gun owner and a business person who does a lot of work in Springfield, by the way. We have enacted the most effective gun laws in the nation. We have the lowest gun death rate in the nation, the lowest cost of gun violence in the nation, yet we make more firearms than maybe every other state in the nation. And many of those weapons can't be sold in Massachusetts. So, for instance, at Columbine, a Savage Arms, Springfield Company, or West Springfield Company, one of the weapons made by Savage was used at Columbine. The AR-15 used at Aurora, made in Massachusetts by Smith & Wesson. The AR-15 used at Parkland, made in Massachusetts by Smith & Wesson. AR-15 used at San Bernardino, AR-15s used at Las Vegas, all made here in Massachusetts. So where is the sense? How can we defend the fact that we don't allow these weapons of war to be sold here in Massachusetts, but we allow the manufacturers to spread mayhem in every other state? It makes no sense. And we can have an impact on national gun violence like we've had on reducing injuries and deaths from guns here in Massachusetts by banning the manufacturing of those weapons.
And can a law like this change the way the gun industry does business, or does the gun industry just move to another state and take jobs and essentially tax revenue with it, among other things?
Well, I mean, look, we have to make a choice. What is the value of your son's life? What is the value of the 100 lives that will be lost today and the 150 that will be shot today, and the 2 mass shootings that will happen today? 90% of gun violence every day, 90% of the people, killed every day, the 100 killed every day. 90% are killed with handguns. That's the majority of the guns that are made and used in crime. So I don't know how many jobs are going to be at stake by Smith & Wesson, who, you know, used to be a really good company. I mean, they, in 1904, Smith & Wesson made and advertised a gun as being childproof. And up until the assault weapon ban expired in 2004, and when we passed our first in the nation consumer protection standards for firearms, because the National Consumer Product Safety Commission prohibits the regulation of real firearms, but does regulate toy guns and teddy bears. So in 98, we passed a law that put first in the nation consumer protection standards on guns. Smith & Wesson complied with all of them. But when the ban on assault weapons expired in 2004, and a new company took over Smith & Wesson called American Outdoor Brands, that is a, you know, a Wall Street private equity firm, they started making assault-style pistols like were used in Boulder, and assault-style rifles that were being used in a lot of high-profile mass shootings.
So, John, if you mentioned a statistic that really jumped out at me, 90% of gun violence is committed by people using handguns. So if that's the case, why the focus on assault weapons? Or, because, you know, what the industry calls modern sporting rifles, military-style weapons.
Because these are military-style weapons designed to kill as many people as possible, as quickly as possible, without having to reload. So why ban military-style assault weapons? Because they're the weapon of choice for people that perpetrate mass shootings. You can't perpetrate a mass shooting with, you know, a hunting rifle with three rounds, you know, like that are required for duck, or five rounds required for deer, because, by the way, when you hunt and you get a license, you're limited to three rounds for duck and five rounds for deer to protect the deer population. But when you want to hunt humans, there's no limit. So police carry 13 to 17 rounds. That's what they're given in their service weapons to protect us, Anthony. But Congress says it's perfectly fine to give criminals, people who can't pass background checks, the ability to buy 30 to 100 round magazines without having to reload in 32 states, including bordering states of Massachusetts, without an ID or a background check. So these are weapons. Let me just tell you an example. I have friends who lost their 6 and 7 year olds at Sandy Hook. Each of those 20 first graders received 3 to 11 rounds with an AR-15 and a 223 round. The 223 round is designed not to penetrate the body. It is designed to hit flesh and bone and tumble. The entry wound is about, you know, a half inch in diameter. The exit wound can be 10 inches in diameter. It is a weapon of war to stop an incoming infantry. And my friends had to identify their children at Sandy Hook after getting 3 to 11 rounds by their clothing because they were indistinguishable looking. Now, why is that weapon available to the civilian population to perpetrate daily mass shootings?
John Rosenthal, stand by. Listeners, we are taking your calls. If you've been affected by gun violence, we want to hear from you. What do you make of proposed legislation to expand the assault weapons ban by making it illegal for Massachusetts-based gun makers to manufacture and sell these weapons to private citizens in other states? Give us a call, 1-800-423-8255. And I'm happy to welcome Sandy Phillips into the conversation. Her daughter, Jessica, was among 12 people shot to death in a movie theater in Aurora, Colorado in July of 2012. And Sandy Phillips, thank you for joining us. We appreciate it.
Thank you for the invitation.
Yeah, and I want to say right off the top, your family has endured something that no family should have to endure. So first of all, I want to say to you how sorry I am for your loss, and thank you again for joining us. I watched the press conference this morning at which you spoke about how your daughter died, and you made the point about the lethality of these weapons. What do you need people in Massachusetts to understand about this? And I know it's a difficult subject for you to talk about.
It is, but you know, we've been responding to public mass shootings now since ours. Our first response was to Sandy Hook. And when those people walked into the community center, I turned to my husband and said, that's what we looked like 5 months ago. And it's that shell shock, that disbelief that your life has been totally turned upside down and that you have to redefine yourself after that event. Since then, we've been to 17 mass shootings. And so we know what these people live with on a daily basis. So when I spoke today, and I was very descriptive about the wounds that Jesse suffered, I do it not to be to make it dramatic, if you will. I do it so people understand when our children, our loved ones, are hit by these bullets, it destroys in a way that no other bullets do. And we have to live with that reality every single day of our lives. So we lose 40,000 people to gun violence in this country every year, but only 2% of those are mass shootings. But those mass shootings are so horrific, and they push policy because people are so angered by these events. They're tired of the bloodshed. They're tired of being fearful to go to the grocery store, to the movie theater, to school. We shouldn't have to be living our life in fear. And these weapons of war do not belong in the hands of the public.
Well, we talk about Massachusetts as having some of the strictest gun laws in the nation. It also has a thriving gun industry. And we've talked about Smith & Wesson and Springfield as an example of that. It's the country's biggest gun maker. Can a law like this change the way the gun industry does business? Are you hopeful that it can do that? Or is it about enacting legislation that would, for example, bring back an assault weapons ban nationwide? I mean, what's your goal?
Well, my personal goal is to keep these weapons out of the hands of civilians. But I will tell you, we sued the manufacturer of our gun that was sold, the ammo that was sold over the internet. And it got nowhere. It was thrown out of court because of a law that exists by the name of the Protection of Lawful Commerce in Arms Act. And that protects the gun industry. So an industry that doesn't have to abide by the rules that we would like to see them abide by, the public, and they don't have to conform to public health and safety issues, there's no reason for them to conform to them. They're out there doing whatever they want, and they don't care how many people it kills.
Sandy, we've got and John, stand by. We've got a couple of calls that I'd like to go to. Let's go to Julio, who's calling from Cambridge with a comment and a question. Julio, go ahead. You're on the air. Thanks for calling.
No, absolutely. First off, my heart breaks for any parent that has to face this situation. But I think in terms of effectiveness and efficacy of legislation, this is really a mental health issue. This isn't a gun issue. You know, let's say they get their wish and assault weapons are banned. You can do just as much damage with a handgun and a 10-round clip that you have three or four of. So, you know, legislation like this feels good, but I think we have to have clear vision in terms of what's going to be effective. And that's really mental health. I am a firearm owner. I take my training seriously. And what these folks call weapon of war, I call home defense. And I have a Second Amendment right to do that. So, you know, I think...
Julio, I got it. And I think you made the point really well. And I know a lot of folks who keep firearms and are concerned about Second Amendment rights talk about this issue of focusing on mental health. I think it's an important point. John, why don't you respond to Julio? Because I know he raises a point that a lot of people agree with in the community that owns guns.
Yeah. So I'm a gun owner too, Julio. I have a shotgun, and frankly, it would be a lot more effective in home protection than your handgun or an assault rifle that are much harder to control and require much more precision. But that said, there's more gun violence in the United States than all 26 industrialized nations combined. And we don't have a lock on mental health issues in this country. Every country, every family has it at one point or another. Every teenager is temporarily insane at one point or another. The last thing you should do is arm them. And in the United States, uniquely in the world, we arm anybody with military-style assault weapons and easily concealed handguns and large-capacity ammunition magazines in 32 states and at thousands of gun shows without an ID or a background check to even know if they're a prohibited buyer or might have a history of mental health issues. So this isn't a way of banning guns, but Massachusetts, just simply by regulating gun owners, dealers, manufacturers, and law enforcement, has reduced the rate of gun deaths by 40% since 1994. We have the lowest gun death rate in the nation. We're an urban state. And frankly, we have mentally ill people here just like everywhere else. But we just make it harder for them and prohibited, you know, felons from getting firearms. And especially, you know, large capacity ammunition magazines and military style assault weapons. And you know as well as I've been through training. I own a firearm. It is not an easy weapon to control, you know, and these are truly, you know, extensions of weapons of war. They're not simple handguns, nor do I think that we should be having, you know, large capacity ammunition magazines, even 10 rounds. I mean, we set the limit here in the state. But you may have hunted like me, and you got to get a license to hunt. You don't need a license to own a firearm in most states, but you got to have a license in every state to hunt duck and deer. And we're limited to 3 and 5 rounds to protect the duck and deer population. Why are we not protecting the human population the same way?
Sandy, I'm going to let you go in about a minute when we hit our break, but I wanted to give you the last word here and respond to our caller that the focus should be on mental health issues as opposed to the gun. And yeah, I'd really like to hear your response to that.
Well, I am a gun owner too. And we don't have any more mentally ill in this country than we do in any other industrialized country. What we do have is easy access to weapons. And in the Second Amendment, it does say well-regulated, and we are far, far from well-regulated in this country. And I hope that your listener never has to lose a child. I hope he never has to know somebody that has been taken by gun violence. But I will tell you right now, everyone listening to this call today is 1 degree of separation from my story being their story. And they do not want this to be their story.
All right. Well, that's Sandy Phillips. Her daughter, Jessica, was among 12 people shot to death in a movie theater in Aurora, Colorado in July of 2012. Sandy Phillips, thank you so much for joining us today. We're very, very grateful.
Thank you for having us.
We're talking about proposed legislation in Massachusetts filed just this morning that would essentially expand the assault weapons ban by making it not only illegal to own one of these weapons in Massachusetts, but gun makers in Massachusetts would not be allowed to manufacture these weapons to sell them out of state. And we've been hearing from victims of gun violence. We've got John Rosenthal here from Stop Handgun Violence. And let's go to Amy Swearer. She's a legal fellow with the Heritage Foundation, a conservative think tank in Washington. And Ms. Swearer, thank you for joining us. It's good to have you.
Thank you so much for having me.
Give me a sense of your reaction to what some lawmakers in Massachusetts would like to do with this legislation.
Well, so it's my understanding that essentially this seems to be directed at gun manufacturers in Massachusetts, like Smith & Wesson and some others. So you're saying, look, if you're going to produce firearms, manufacture firearms in this state, you're only going to be able to essentially produce firearms for civilians that can be sold in this state. In other words, if you want to produce in this state and manufacture in this state, we're not going to allow you to sell firearms that are, you know, unlawful in our state outside of our state. And I'm not quite sure what the goal is here in terms of, you know, the long term, because it would seem to me, especially given manufacturers like Smith & Wesson and their I mean, a lot of people are buying these firearms. That essentially, it just seems to me that it's a way of, if you will, kicking out firearms manufacturers from this state who are going to continue to just manufacture elsewhere and sell these firearms elsewhere. So I'm not sure it actually in the long run is going to even accomplish its goal of, you know, making these firearms manufacturers stop producing and selling these firearms to civilians. But then on top of that, I think you start getting into what is the overarching goal of these, you know, quote unquote, assault weapons bans in the first place. And I think that falls into that same trap. Yeah.
Yeah. Before we get to sort of the overall goal of assault weapons bans, I mean, the idea behind this legislation, and I should probably let John Rosenthal jump in here, but I'm just going to sort of summarize what I heard this morning and what we've been talking about in this show is there's this simple idea almost of fairness. You know, Massachusetts decided that these weapons shouldn't be in the hands of private citizens. So the state passed a law that says they can't be. And there's this concern that we are exporting them essentially to other states where they're falling in the wrong hands and wreaking havoc. So these legislators want to just say that just on the face of it is wrong, and we've got to put a stop to that and essentially plug the loophole of the state's assault weapons ban.
Yeah, right. And I guess, you know, again, in the long run, I just don't see major manufacturers who, you know, continue to produce these weapons abiding. You know, I see them in the long run just manufacturing in other states and moving out of the state rather than complying with that, precisely because sales of these are amongst law-abiding Americans in other states are so essential to the gun industry right now. I just don't see that really cutting down that loophole meaningfully.
Yeah. Well, I'd like to bring John Rosenthal into this and respond to that. I mean, I did ask you earlier in the segment, John, just this idea, do the gun makers just move out and go to another state and just continue on their merry way?
Well, there's 24 known gun manufacturers here in Massachusetts that I'm aware of. And Smith & Wesson used to be able to comply to all of our gun laws, as I mentioned earlier. Clearly, we need national legislation. We have a serious gun problem in this country because of unregulated access to firearms without background checks, because we're unique in selling military-style weapons to the general public. And that combined with, you know, perhaps as big a problem with a spineless Congress is deadly. And, you know, at some point, states have to do something because the Republican Party is owned by the gun lobby and the Democrats have been basically, intimidated into submission so that more Americans have died in this country from guns since 1975 than all U.S. servicemen and women killed in all foreign wars combined. I mean, when is enough enough? So there's two mass shootings a day with these military style assault weapons. Do we need to wait till there's 10 a day until we say, okay, let's regulate, you know, the industry? So I believe it's a national problem. But in the absence of Congress caring more about human life than their own special interest, blood money campaign contributions, what we've got to do is act on the state level. And we have passed four laws in Massachusetts, three of which were signed by Republican governors. And as a result, we've reduced the rate of gun deaths by 40%. And we're the safest state in the nation. If every state simply had the same gun death rate that we have here, 27,000 lives would be saved with, you know, simply just doing what Massachusetts does nationally a year. But as long as Congress doesn't do it, Massachusetts has to do more. And we are exporting weapons of war that aren't allowed to be owned or sold in Massachusetts. We're creating mayhem elsewhere, and there's a fairness issue there. And I also think that there are plenty of people who work in the gun industry who would be happy to not make military style weapons that are literally designed to kill as many people as possible, including kill police while they're reloading.
Let me come back to you, Amy Swearer. I mean, I want to ask just if you by John Rosenthal's basic analysis that we've got a crisis here. I mean, this year we've already had 156 mass shootings. That's according to the Gun Violence Archive. Is there a problem out there that we need to address in some way? And if so, how would you address it?
Well, I think I'm actually going to push back here a little bit on even just the general framing of this. So when you look at this idea of gun violence in the United States, I think it would shock a lot of people to know that we are actually significantly safer from gun violence today across the board than in the early 1990s, that gun violence is actually significantly lower, whether it's rates of gun homicide or rates of gun crime generally. And that's despite in a significant increase in the number of guns per capita. I think where we really are seeing a gradual increase over time is in suicide generally, including in gun suicide. Though again, you know, that gets even more complicated when you look at overall suicide rates comparatively. But what I'm getting at here is that, you know, I don't think this idea of you know, more guns and you know, more gun regulation is what's actually driving decreases in crime in certain states. It's actually more complicated than that. Violence is much more complicated than that. And you see that, again, even in the decline of gun violence over time, what we actually have is a gun suicide problem. And then I want to talk about this framing of these semi-automatic firearms as weapons of war. What actually is a quote-unquote assault weapon? So when you look at how these things are defined, they're not based on any sort of, you know, objective functionality. It's not rate of fire. These are all semi-automatic firearms. It's not caliber. It's generally based on things that are cosmetic features, things that make the firearm easier to operate for responsible citizens. So these are not fully automatic machine guns. These are not.
No, I understand. And I don't want to get too I'm going to jump in here just only because when I have these discussions, so often we end up going down the rabbit hole of the definition of an assault weapon. And I get it. Let's just I know that the industry calls these modern sporting rifles. Someone like John Rosenthal is going to call them an assault weapon. Other folks, legislators, are going to call them military style weapons. We know what we're talking about. They're powerful weapons. You can put magazines in them. You can do a lot of damage with them very, very quickly. So let's just agree on that. But here's a basic question to you, Amy Swearer, that I want to ask you about. When you talk about guns not being the issue, compared to other developed countries where citizens simply do not have access to weapons like we do in the United States, the numbers are so much lower. Doesn't that in and of itself suggest that easy access of guns in America is creating a problem, whether it's the problem with mass shootings, whether, as you correctly point out, it's with suicides that make up the bulk of gun deaths in America? All of that is about access to guns.
Well, yes and no. So it's access to firearms for who? So when you look at things like rates of gun crime, these are overwhelmingly committed by individuals who are already prohibited persons, who are utilizing a very robust black market system in the United States. And so I think, you know, where there is, I think, opportunity for people to agree on, you know, this idea of sort of cracking down on firearm ownership, it's actually getting guns out of the hands of individuals who we all agree are dangerous and prohibited persons. You know, and a lot of that doesn't actually come from, you know, expanding background checks or what have you. That's actually not where most of these individuals are getting their guns. You know, it's this idea of people who know that they are selling to prohibited persons continuing to sell to them. Okay. So I think being able to crack down on that is what's more important.
Got it. John Rosenthal, we're out of time. I want to give you the last word in this, since you're behind this piece of legislation that we're discussing today. Last word.
Oh, boy. How do you know somebody's prohibited if you don't do a background check? And my guess is this woman, Amy, would be opposed to universal background checks for all gun sales. And why do you give police officers 13 to 17 rounds, but you give people without background checks cash and carry 100 round magazines to perpetrate violence? And stop, you know, be cherry picking. 40,000 Americans die every single year. 2/3 are suicides. I get it. But in states with tougher gun laws, there are lower suicide rates too. In every single state that has a background check requirement, never mind an assault weapon ban, and stronger gun laws, has lower gun death rates than every single state with lax gun death rates. So, you know, this is a, you know, I think Amy's being very disingenuous. The fact is, if we had universal background checks, if we had a ban on military-style assault weapons, including the manufacture, if we treated magazines, you know, that are you know, like we use for hunting deer or duck for human beings, we would dramatically reduce injuries and deaths from guns without any inconvenience to law-abiding people, and we'd know that criminals were buying guns if we had a background check requirement.
Amy Swear, in fairness, I said that was the last word, but John did sort of assume that you were opposed to universal background checks. I want to just give you a chance to respond to that. I literally have 15 seconds left in this break.
15 seconds. I would encourage you to look at my congressional testimony in front of the Senate Judiciary Committee on my actual thoughts on universal background checks. And I think it's unfair to actually characterize my thoughts that way.